Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Our guest this evening was scheduled to be Exavant Hayes, who has written a book about the assassination of Abraham Lincoln and the Civil War and the big banks. And I thought it was kind of appropriate since I've been talking about the potential for a civil war, as told by the Meyer material, but it looks like Mr. X, let's call him Mr. X, has not shown. And he may have been confused by time changes or time zones. I think he lives in Arizona. So I told him 8 p.m. Eastern. So he has not called in. I am going to proceed on with some information in the Meyer material that I haven't been able to get to yet, but I thought I would start back and talk a little bit about the overview. I think it's so important to go over the overview. Edward Albert Meyer, he's a farmer in Switzerland. He's also a very prolific author. He's just about 80 years old. He lives 52 minutes east of Zurich in a beautiful green forested area in a little tiny mountain village called Hinterschmidruti. He's taken over 1,200 photographs of extraterrestrial ships which have hovered in and around his property there at Hinterschmidruti. There's also been like 100 other eyewitnesses of these ships. Billy has also created something like 30 films of these craft, some of them which were done at very close range. Billy has also had metal samples. At one time he had metal samples that were verified by a IBM scientist as being something that, as far as he was concerned, couldn't have been produced on this world. And right around 1975 or so, Colonel Wendell Stevens went over to Switzerland and brought an investigative group with him to look at this case. And they also found that it was perfectly legitimate as well. And Billy also passed all his lie detector tests. I do have a caller. I'm just going to double check and see if this might be our guest. 520, is this Exavant? 520, are you the guest or are you just listening?
Oh, hello.
Hello?
Yeah, this is Xavier.
Xavier, is that how you pronounce your name, sir?
Yeah.
Well, welcome to the show. How are you this evening?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing very, very good. I'm glad you could make it. I wasn't sure if you were going to be able to make it tonight. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Because I don't know that much about you, and I know the listeners don't either.
Well, I am from Seattle, so that's a start. And
okay.
Basically, I've written about 10 books now, that's about it.
Tell us about some of your other books that you've written.
Well, I have another book that just came out about ancient giants in the Americas.
Okay.
So that's, I think, being out next week, I guess. And But I've written about aliens in ancient Egypt. I've written about the suppressed history of America, which this book is actually a sequel to that first one. You know, Meriwether Lewis, Masonic Mysteries, Transhumanism, Robots, a diverse range of topics.
Sounds like some of your other books fit real well into the theme of the show. You said suppressed history about the United States. Can you kind of give us a quick overview of that?
Well, basically, in the first book, I went through from the beginning, you know, from the Revolutionary War up into the supposed suicide of Meriwether Lewis, who was actually murdered. So a lot of the suppressed history would deal with the suppression of giants, including, you're in the Ohio area?
Yes.
Okay, well, there's the mounds, right? So there's a vast population of mounds in the Ohio area that
yeah.
when the settlers were unearthing as the westward expansion was taking place, a lot of 7 to 8 to 10 foot giant bones were found in these mounds. So these are some of the part of the suppressed history that, you know, comes up when
Why?
You're dealing with.
Why would this history be suppressed? What are your thoughts? Is it religion?
That's a lot to do with it. Basically, the Smithsonian has an interest to keep the Darwinian theory of evolution going. And the religious aspect is a huge factor, of course. I guess they wouldn't want to give credence to it. But it depends on how you look at it. It would be a good thing, but if you look at it as the ancient histories as actual historical records, which they kind of are, you know, so that just kind of verifies, you know, all ancient cultures talk about this. So it's not it upsets the apple cart in the religious aspect, but, you know, the Native Americans have a long history of in traditions of ancient giants. And actually attribute them as building, you know, the mounds, or even in Mexico, like the megalithic cities, Tiahuanacu and stuff. So the fact that the Smithsonian would have to basically accept that, work with those findings, and start to change everything they've been teaching us.
Now, does the presence of giants, would that take credit away from Darwin in some way?
I mean, not really, if you think about it. But it brings, because Darwin himself admits there's a missing link, right?
Mm-hmm.
And all the time they're finding new humanoid species that, you know, that goes back millions of years. Then you have the Denisovans and the mixing of Neanderthal genes. So they can't really. The missing link might be the giants that they keep suppressing. But then if you look at the history of the giants, then you have to take a look into the ancient astronaut theory and genetic manipulation. You know, because in the Bible, according to the Bible, and other, basically all of those religious texts, you know, kind of say the same thing, even in Hindu versions. They all talk about the gods who created a race of giants that were destroyed. So if they kind of accept that there were giants, then they have to accept, well, why do all these ancient cultures talk about creating this specific race? So I think it will get very complex, and I think they kind of have it to the point now where why bother?
Yeah. They don't care about the truth. Why bother? You know.
Yeah.
It upsets the apple cart. It's too much work to get down to the real truth. Exavant, did I pronounce your name wrong again? Say your name again.
Exavient.
Exavient. Thank you. Exavient. I was hearing flute music there for a while. Are you hearing that too?
Yeah, I think so. Hold on.
Is that yours?
Yeah, the TV.
Oh, okay.
I have soundscapes on, like, because I just have it on most of the time, and I just forgot to turn it down, I guess.
It's not that I didn't like the music. It was actually pretty nice. But you say some Hindu books talk about giants, too. I'm interested in this topic. I know I'm kind of going on a tangent here, but go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I think in Lepekshi province, you could see it on the internet. There's actually a footprint. It's two footprints that are embedded within in the front of the temple. So, you know, there are actual physical in Syria as well, the Andara temple in Aleppo, which might have been blown to bits by now.
Yeah.
You can see footprints there as well in the ancient temples.
So at Aleppo in Syria, sorry to interrupt you, you're saying there are giant footprints. There were, anyway.
Yes, at the Andara temple. Yep.
Andara?
Yeah, it's A-I-N, and then the second word, I think it's D-A-R-A, Dara, Andara. And anyone can Google that and check it out, and it'll blow your mind.
And how big are these footprints?
I mean, they're giant footprints, so they would be, I would imagine, 30 feet, I guess.
What?
I mean, 30, 4 feet, 4 or 5 feet.
4 or 5 feet?
Yes, so like 30 inches around there.
Do you think that the powers that be would intentionally start a war there just to destroy this evidence?
Well, basically, it's funny how the areas where you can't go to have histories of these, you know, these legends of ancient aliens, you know, ancient giants, you know, the ancient cultures, some of the oldest in the world, right? I mean, like Iraq, that's Sumeria. I mean, that's Gilgamesh territory. They announced, a German archaeological team announced they found Gilgamesh's tomb. You know, and Gilgamesh was a giant. And literally a few months afterwards, the Iraq war broke out. And when they went into Iraq, the first place they went was into the museum. So they're, you know, they're looking for something. So it's strange that these monuments would be destroyed. You know, ISIS is destroying everything they can. And then the fact that you can't really visit these places. I mean, there's areas in Iran like Persepolis and incredible ancient ruins that, you know, most people will never be able to visit. But yeah, it's interesting that those areas, there's always some sort of destruction or war. Look at Israel and Palestine, and you know, the vast, like the incredible, like the Wailing Wall, you know, the historic wall over there, where Abraham like ascended or whatever. You know, these are massive megalithic wall. So anytime you see these areas that's really old and something really happened, like Egypt, you know, same thing. Egypt's probably the safest you can go to, but still, anything could happen at the drop of a hat over there. So it is pretty odd that the access to these sites is pretty restricted, if you think about it.
Well, let me read a little bit, and this is just from Wikipedia, in regards to these footprints at Andara. It says, a pair of large bear footprints, each about 3 foot in length, are carved into the stone floors of the portico, followed by a single footprint carved beyond the first two, and another single footprint carved into the threshold, marking the quote-unquote deity's procession into this area. It is also conjectured that these footprints could be of unidentified immense clawed creatures, whatever. The inference is that the right footprint seen on the threshold, which is spaced about 10 meters from the first footprint, could be of a human or a goddess, and they're saying 66 feet in height. Monson has also noted that the deities in all the Andara temple reliefs have shoes with curled up toes Hence the source of the footprints, whether of gods or humans or animals, is debatable. Well, that's one of the most astounding things I have ever read. And they got pictures of these footprints. They're just absolutely astonishing.
They're amazing.
And, you know, this is, yeah, I mean, I have heard, there's another researcher that researches in Africa who I've seen him standing.
Yes, that's Michael Tellinger.
Mike Tellinger.
And that's footprint in South Africa, yeah.
Yeah, that footprint is like it's embedded in a rock that's kind of flipped up on its side.
Right.
And it's as tall as he is. It's as big as he is. It's absolutely stunning. So you've done a lot of writing of different kinds of topics. And I mean, I think this is very important because I think if we knew our real history, so much of our confusion would go away. And
yeah, exactly. That's why I do it.
It would go ahead. Continue.
Well, I mean, that's kind of why I do this, and especially in the way the world is now. It's ridiculously divided. The divide and conquer tactics they're using is really unprecedented. It's like we're de-evolving. It's ridiculous. But yeah, I mean, once you realize the true history that benefits all of us, you know, all races, creed, and color, man, because, I mean, we're on Earth. Like, we're all part of this, so... you know, it serves the Illuminati and the New World Order's interest to keep everyone divided and keep this. Now, especially since their whole thing is collapsing, and with Trump's win, it's really shaking everyone up, especially the establishment. So, you know, all of us are going into this great unknown. So, but it definitely, once you have an understanding of, you know, what true history is, not the suppressed history, the actual real history. That knowledge it gives you, it's kind of like weed, you know. It just brings everybody together.
Well, I think what it will. I think it will. If we knew our real history, it would take a lot of the. How can I say this? I'll just be politically incorrect. I think it'll take a lot of the nonsense away because I think what we have is a worldview that doesn't really make sense and doesn't really work. And we don't know who we are. We don't know where we come from. And the history, if we could unlock the real history, I think it would have a calming effect. When people finally start to understand the real meaning of life and the incredible things that have gone on this planet. Because based on things like these gigantic footprints and the you know, if you look at the structures that are in Egypt, have you ever studied any of Egypt? I'm sure you have, haven't you?
Yeah, I have a whole book on it, and it's... yeah, it basically, for them to tell the ridiculous lies they continually telling you, it's, you know, to me it's just mind-blowing. I mean, okay, if you go to school and get your degree in archaeology, you know, you're going to have to go off the king's list from the Palermo Stone, right? And this is standard. This is kind of what they teach you. However, what they don't teach you on that same list is the list of the pre-pharaonic sky kings. so
they don't talk about the... Tell us that again. I want you to say that again. Repeat that. They talk about sky kings?
When you get your degree in archaeology, you'll learn about the king list on the Palermo Stone. But they only teach you a certain point. They don't teach you... the beginning point, which the pre-pharaonic sky kings who ruled Egypt, according to the Palermo Stone, they were around for hundreds of thousands of years. Up until the last, basically the pyramids had always kind of been there, but they, you know, basically were, it was like a beacon point, like a homing point, you know, for when you're flying over. like for Earth, basically, because, I mean, the fact that they exist there makes no sense. I mean, they're on literally the complete cardinal points of the world, right? You know, it's intersection. It's like all of the sciences, all of the mathematical, it's too much for even remember, but all of the secrets within the pyramid and their location is just insane. So then you have basically they were like an energy sort of, there was some sort of field that worked in accordance with the different stones, because you have the granites, you have the red granite, you have the black granite, you have the quartz crystal, you have the water. Basically, some sort of machine, it appears, like that whole complex was. And after the flood, it was basically decommissioned. So, you know, and we know it was before the flood, because when they first went in there, you know, the archaeologists and the explorers of the 1800s, they described all the salt that they still found within in the sealed parts of the pyramids. Then, you know, we know for a fact that they have actual trilobites and seashells all embedded within the rocks. And we know that the Sphinx has suffered rain weathering, right? Like the erosion, the water erosion that only comes from, could only come from the tropical rains during at least before the flood, 12,000 years before. So, there's so much there. And then you have all, like, the best part is you have the megalithic works that basically show engineering to the point where it looks like either lasers or diamond sawed. You can see the cuts, you know, and it's just there are markings there that just don't make any sense. And you can see those same type of cuts in Peru, you know, so you have kind of the same megalithic structures with the same type of machined appearances, you know, on opposite sides of the world. And, you know, that's something they'll never talk about. They'll never, like, you go to college 4 years, spend a ton of money, and they will never, ever spend two sentences on that. So it's, you know, but you can see it for yourself, you know.
Now, I want to hear more about these Sky Kings. How did you find out about the Sky Kings if it's being suppressed so much?
Well, basically, it's there. You can read it. They don't deny it, but they don't teach it to you. That's the thing.
Okay.
You have to you have to search for it. It's like they'll tell you that the Thule Papyrus, the Thule Manuscript, has talks about the UFO encounters of, I believe it was the Pharaoh Akhenaten's grandfather, so I think it was Thutmose III. And these are on the walls in Karnak. I mean, there are actually hieroglyphs there talking about it. So it is there. But the manuscript talks about this encounter. And it kind of disappeared, you know, into the black market, into the private sector in the early 30s, and then basically the CIA and everyone's been looking for it ever since. It hasn't really surfaced, but, you know, it was documented before that, and that's how we know. And then you can visit the walls of Karnak and talk about it. And that's why they kind of think that maybe how strange it might have been for Akhenaten, you know, who was weird enough. They basically try to erase him from history. And then, you know, when they uncovered him in the early 20s, or I think it was the 20s, but in the early 20th century, they found elongated skull, you know, serpentine, reptilian features, art forms that they had never, ever had seen before in their lives, and strange curiosities, you know, why this alien-looking persona, why, you know, why the elongated skulls, and, you know, and then they actually found elongated skulls when they're digging in Abydos, which is one of the old centers of ancient Egypt. That's where you'll find the Assyrian complex, where supposedly Osiris was buried, you know. And that has ancient megalithic structure there called the Osirian Temple, and it's just incredible, super old. And that's where they found these elongated skulls. They also found these wheel-shaped looking thing that looks like some sort of steering wheel from a helicopter or some weird stuff. They found a bunch of crazy stuff. And Sir William Petrie found these things. Some of them are at the museum in Cairo. They're so out of place, they look crazy. But ancient Egypt has tons of incredible stuff to see, and the history is, all history is basically written by the winners. So you have adaptations over time to fit in with current thinking or current whatever the way they're trying to steer and shape their own version of history. Egypt's been, it's so old, and it's been talked about for so long, so we have a lot of information. But basically, 90% is still under the sand, so, who knows what's really out there. But they found ancient giants in there, and if you look at most of the hieroglyphs on the walls, most of what you see is a giant. Like, the pharaoh was always usually depicted as a giant, and everyone's kind of little by him. And I don't know if you seen the giant mummified finger they found?
No, tell us about that.
You should Google that one too. Okay, there's a nightclub owner, I can't remember his name, Spuri. He was a famous nightclub owner in like Swiss and German, and he went to Egypt in the 80s, and he was hanging out with a Bedouin tribe who showed him a mummified finger, a giant mummified finger. It's like 20 inches long, I think. And he took pictures of it and everything, and he went to the press, but they kind of just laughed at him and whatever. So he really didn't do anything with it for like 10 or 15 years. And I think like 20 years later, he went back to look for the tribe, and he published it, so you could see this massive giant finger. You can Google it and check it out. It's pretty famous. It's mind-blowing, and it basically verifies that, ancient Egypt had giants. They have a bunch of elongated skulls. I mean, they find them in Malta, Peru. They've been found in Iran, a lot of places. Even in America, down in Florida, they found some elongated skulls. So it's not always, they try to just say that they're all, it's just because they're head-binding. Because they have a rebuttal for everything,
Oh yeah, they do that. It's because they're not really trying to find the truth. They're just trying to rebut.
They're on the defensive all the time. Yeah, all the time. Yeah. They're on the because new shit's coming out every day. That's like basically it lets them know that. Why would you bind? Because they don't look at the easy question is, why would anyone bind their head? Like, who are they trying to imitate?
Exactly. Exactly. Now, you talked about Thutmose III, I think the grandfather of Akhenaten, who had a UFO encounter. Can you tell us any more about that?
I mean, that's basically what we know. I speculate in my book, Aliens in Ancient Egypt, that could have been how it led to the Golden Age, because basically that was the time when Egypt supposedly started building everything. So did they come at that time and give them this knowledge? It could have been. The timing is pretty strange. And then Akhenaten, who basically grew up in this system, what did he actually know? Like, what was he privy to? Because he basically was, the man of the high castle and decided, like, this ain't for me. And he changed everything. And he basically, that was the first banking revolution. He kind of said, wait a minute, why are we charging people? Because everyone, to get mummified, it was like this big system of, you have to have this knick-knack, and you have to have these certain things, right? Before you went to the afterlife, for your death. So it's kind of collecting items, you know, much the same way that Martin Luther rebelled against the church in Germany, you know, with the, because they were selling the 25-cent get into heaven, you know, paper, you know, certificate, right? And he was like, what is this? So it's kind of the same concept. Akhenaten was like, you know, we ain't going to have this. And he wanted to get back to the old, you know, they call it monotheistic, but it's basically like the original, the sun, you know. So he kind of kicked all the bankers out, overthrew everybody, you know, overthrew the bankers, and then went into this different, into a whole different, he went back to the old ways, but society changed overnight, basically. And then it flourished, arts flourished and everything else, but after a period, you know, the bankers made it, you know, it was basically a revolution and war on them. So anytime you have a problem with them, they know how to make situation bad for the people. So that's kind of what happened. And eventually the people turned, it wasn't going so well. And then, you know, they stormed his palace and that was it. You know, that was the end of him. They try to say that King Tut was his son, and you know they found his body or whatever, but it's not true. There's no real proof of that, and even from the record, you know, all he had was daughters, so there's never any images of him with the son. You know, and then we don't know what happened to Nefertiti because that was Akhenaten's wife. You know, it's speculated that she escaped. And then that's where we get this Mary Magdalene or, you know, these type of myths from. And then the Akhenaten myth, you know, in general is, you know, some people claim might have been inspired Moses. And then we don't even know who Moses was, if he even existed, you know. So there's all these mysteries that surround that. These periods in history in that specific area, you know. But how interesting is it that Moses, like his biggest, you know, because his biggest, he had to get people to Israel, right? But when he got there, he found a bunch of giants. if you know your Bible history, you kind of go back into it and look at how many parts of the Bible were actually about them killing giants. You know, those leftover mean giants. It's very interesting. A ton of the Bible is about it. And even, you know, especially Moses, like he had his spies, like they're like, oh, coming back, man, they were giants. So, you know, like maybe we should go another route. So it's very interesting.
The Sky Kings, did they ever talk about what their ships look like?
Ah, no. I mean, the description from what we know of from that encounter was basically just like they flying shields. Basically, they can't describe them any other way. You know, flying shields, flying discs. This is how I think it was Alexander the Great. They had a UFO encounter during one of their battles, and that's how they described them: flying shields. And you can see it in a bunch of art from the, you know, medieval times all the way up into 16th, 17th century. You can see the sort of alien, otherworldly UFO type presence. And, you know, it's only when you think about now, where we're at now, I mean, how far have we actually come? I mean, obviously, you have to look at the modern UFO situation. And I don't know how, like, this topic is for your audience or if, you know, this is something that you guys...
This is what our show is about most of the time. Yeah.
Cool, because we didn't even talk anything about, like, American banking. That's fine, man. Like, I'd rather talk about this stuff. This is much more fun.
Okay.
So I'm in Tucson, Arizona, right? And this area has a lot of UFO encounters. We had the Phoenix Lights. You know, my uncle personally had the Phoenix Lights encounter, and he's told me all about it, and he's seen some other stuff too. And we've been out, and you know, if you get out here, like, we have some of the best, you know, observatories in the world. You know, University of Arizona has amazing telescopes, right? And you can get out in the mountains up here, and it's just nothing. You can put on some, you know, night vision, you know, some good night vision goggles, and you'll see some incredible things. You know, but you got to keep in mind that the UFO situation, which it sucks because, you know, we all want disclosure, but it probably will never happen. Like, I think we're dealing
not like
with slow.
That.
Yeah, I mean, we're going through a slow disclosure, and that's probably the only way it can happen.
Right.
So you look at the situation with the UFO, and I would assume about 75% are actually ours, which is to me the worst part of this topic is we are kept in the dark for so long about the technology. You know, like anything we see now, you can bet the government did that like 20, 30 years ago. They're just making it available to us. So you know the UFO stuff. Like, how long have they been working on? They've had the Nazi scientists, you know, from Operation Paperclip and, you know, from Roswell days. You know, they've been developing this stuff, right? That is a long time. I mean, and there's a lot of programs like the B-52. You know, there's a lot of, like, actual programs that come from this secret programs that they, you know, then later on they kind of emerged. But I want to know about the Black Triangle, the TR-8s and the TRB-8s or whatever there are in there. I mean, what are those, you know, if there are ours? Mm-hmm. And you know, by them revealing this technology, because you got to understand, like, DARPA. Now, DARPA is the government, right? So we don't know really what they're doing, only, like, the little stuff they let us know about, like robotics, you know, stuff like that. So if we don't know what DARPA is doing, we don't know what they're doing behind DARPA and with the real shadow government and with the real government, because there's agencies. I mean, there's you know, in the book I have, in my Aliens and Ancient Egypt book, I talk about all these patches from these that were made available, you know, from FOI, Freedom of Information Act, that, I mean, they're beyond like CIA organizations, like super secret. I mean, there's patches that exist, you know, that show alien stuff, like Space Command stuff, like Gary McKinnon hacking into the, you know, the Pentagon and finding a Air Force fleet in space, you know? So there's incredible amounts of the space issue that we don't even have a clue about. And I would assume that a good chunk of the UFOs we see are ours. You know, they can't, if they tell us we have these secrets, if they reveal it, like, oh, we have this technology, then everyone has to be like, well, shit, we don't need cars anymore. Now we have this incredible, advanced, whatever it is, anti-gravity, you know, who knows what it is. So that's a huge shakeup of the whole system. And then if they reveal it, then it takes, like, their trump card is the New World Order alien invasion, fake alien invasion. Like, that's their number one plot to get the New World Order, like the arrival of it, you know, because that's like everyone could like fight the aliens, right? You know, so they have to kind of keep it. They haven't pulled that one on us yet, so they have to keep that option available. And that's another reason why they can't really have a full disclosure. So,
I still don't say your name right. Xavion. Xavion.
It's like saying Xavier, but just Xavion.
Xavier. Okay, I have a caller that I think has a question for you. Would you be willing to take a call?
Absolutely.
Okay. Okay, caller, just a second. Okay, caller, you're on the air.
Yeah, okay. I just got here, and I was hearing your guest talk about UFOs. Okay, I'd like to know what kind of proof does he have that I can look up and find out for myself that these UFOs that everybody's talking about actually exists.
Well, let me throw one thing out before the guest answers that question. There's one case in Switzerland that I think you should look up. It's the Billy Meyer case. Billy has over 1,200 photographs of these ships hovering that have hovered around his home in Hinterschmidrude, Switzerland. He's got almost 30 films of these ships. There are 100 eyewitnesses over there in Switzerland. And on top of all of that, Billy has written over 40 books, which interestingly, from history, confirm much of what my guest has said. And I'm going to let Exvion answer that question. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, I was about to make the same suggestion. The Billy Meyer case is pretty amazing. You also want to check out the MUFON network. That's basically
okay.
Every UFO sighting.
Okay, how about real documents and not photographs from about 10 miles away, but photographs of a ship or an alien about 10 feet away? Does anybody have
we
that?
We do have that in the Meyer case, and what's really interesting in the Meyer case, not only are these films very close, not only the photographs are very close, they're in the daylight, and all of these photographs were taken before there were Photoshop. Go ahead, Exion.
Well, the thing is you know, you could look into the presidential encounters with UFOs, right? Eisenhower met him, you know. There's Nixon talking about how he saw one in Homestead Air Force Base. But the thing is with these, just like ghostly encounters, until you have a personal experience, you can kind of deny it or be skeptical all you want. But then when you have a personal experience, then you got to figure out, like, okay.
Okay, how do you spell Billy Meyer?
Okay. Sorry about that. Billy Meyer, you can spell B-I-L-L-Y-M-E-I-R. It's
all right.
Billy,
B. Okay, he's in Wikipedia. I'm there now. Okay.
Yeah. I'm gonna let the guest continue. Thanks for calling in. I appreciate it very much.
Sure.
Okay, here we go. All right. Can I steer us back to ancient history? You said some very interesting things about the walls of Karnak. Can you tell us more about that?
Well, I mean, the walls of Karnak, it's a temple in Egypt. And you can kind of see on one of the walls, you can see the massive, I think it might be a representation of Ramses II. Anyways, you can see a huge giant just holding like a giant pharaoh just kind of holding the head of a little man he was fighting. And then
really?
In the other parts of the wall, there's the story, there's the hieroglyphs that talk about this this UFO encounter. You know, ancient Egypt also has Abu Simbel, which is where you see the massive, you come down the river and you see the massive, these carved figures, like they're sitting on the side of a mountain. They're huge.
I think I've seen those.
Yeah, it's incredible. Then you have the unfinished obelisk at Aswan, which just defies explanation. There's a lot there. And then you got to wonder, too, about the reptilian, you know, which is like always the craziest and the most interesting, you know, ancient alien theory. You know, and they have Sabak was one of, like, their crocodile-headed god, right? So they have the reptilian represented in their mythology, the upright walking reptilian. And they even, in Iraq, same thing, the Ubaid culture, like one of the oldest, Agatha Christie's husband was a famous archaeologist, and she used to accompany him on digs. And one of the digs was in Iraq, which would be, you know, around the Babylon area. And they uncovered the Ubaid culture, which was, a prior civilization. They had no idea who it was, but they were elongated skulls. And then the artwork they found, the little statues, were clearly looking like reptilian figures, you know, with the elongated reptilian facial features. And you could Google that. It's Ubaid, Ubaid culture, and you can find the images of the of the statue and figures. That just crazy. You know, so the whole the reptilian aspect of the ancient alien theory, you know, which is made famous by David Icke, and you know, most people say it's crazy or whatever, but it's funny how he's been right about everything except that which you can't prove, especially
right.
how he defines it, because it's interdimensionally, right? So, you know, so I don't know, like, you know, he's been right about everything else, and I want to give him benefit of doubt on that one as well. But when you actually look into this topic in history, and you read about, you know, even the Jewish legends, they talk about this, this reptilian who gave the knowledge, right? The forbidden fruit. And we look at our brains.
The snake, right?
The snake, yeah. And our brains are like the oldest part of our brain is reptilian, right? And then so it's we're all connected to this and this, and there's a scientist, I can't remember his name, but he's talking about the dinosaur, can't remember the name of the dinosaur, but there's this one dinosaur that they discovered his brains had developed faster than any other of the dinosaurs.
Really?
I think it was a tripod or a triapod. It's crazy. I should remember this, but they found this dinosaur, and this professor basically postulated that because of the way this already almost upright walking dinosaur brain had developed faster than any known brain that it had discovered in the ancient world, if it wasn't made extinct by the great cataclysm that supposedly destroyed dinosaurs, he theorized that it could have gained intelligence. It could have been upright walking, you know, like human. And so it's kind of interesting that could have evolved, you know, and maybe it would have met some other aliens or something else. And then it gave them because if you look at these histories, you know, these ancient alien theories and look at how, you know, the gods, right, came and did some experiments and made man smart. But they always had this reptilian sidekick. You know, it was kind of the first ones they might have, you know. So if they had gave him too much knowledge and then he rebelled, or then he kind of was a trickster and made these humanoid experiments, gave them that knowledge, right? Then he had to be destroyed. So you can kind of look at it, if you kind of hover above and not be stuck into this religious box, if you kind of go outside
right.
the box and actually think and theorize and, you know, and not be afraid, you know, because a big problem is a lot of people are conditioned with religion. So it's kind of hard to step away from that, you know, because everyone's afraid. And you got to be afraid of everything. You got to be afraid of God, you know. Once you kind of break that and kind of step aside and understand, like, what the true God is, you know, then you get to kind of piece it together.
The sculptures you're talking about, the Ubaid, they clearly, I'm very impressed. There's really no way to interpret it otherwise than being reptilian. And there's
exactly.
many different sculptures, correct? I mean, there's not just
one
or two.
There's a lot.
They're all over the place, and they have elongated eyes, and they're definitely standing upright. And it's clearly reptilian face. There's no doubt about it. It's very, very unusual. And are these 7,000 years old, these sculptures?
Yeah, I mean, they're at least around that area, because that's the Iraq. And that's the history of, you know, Iraq, where everything is 5,000 to 7,000 to 8,000 years old.
That's very interesting indeed. I didn't know that it was so clearly reptilian. I mean, there's really no way to interpret it otherwise.
Yeah,
there's
no way. Exactly. I know. To me, you know, and let me tell you something. That book, I got hit with all of the. I was supposed to be on Coast to Coast AM like three different times, with kind of like three different
what
guests.
Happened?
Each time it was like canceled last second. You know, they just they put a block up. I literally cannot explain to you how crazy that book has been. Like, there's something in there they don't like, I guess. I mean, I don't know. It's weird.
And you know what's interesting is you don't know what it is. You know, there's probably,
exactly.
You've just touched on something somewhere that is, you know, the tip of a big iceberg, and they don't even want to go there, right?
Yeah, it's pretty much. I think it has to do with Mars. Yeah, because if you look, I mean, in the book I talk about how, you know, the science, I mean, I could go to NASA, from the NASA science, where they admit to finding an amount of, like, Martian syllabite that's, like, part of a rock, like part of formation of rock that they found, you know, they have it in Mars, and then they found it in Egypt, right? So a lot of the ancient stuff in Egypt has this combination of this Mars rock mixed
mm-hmm.
in with it. And you know, there's a French professor who kind of discovered this, I think, in the early 80s, and they just shut him out. So you can kind of see how, you know, there's this, why would they need some Martian rock? Like, why would they need elements from that? And is it because that's what helped it make it into, like, a mortar? Like, it seems that these megalithic blocks were poured into place. So, because this is so smooth and so incredible, and they're so out of place, that it doesn't make sense, you know? So they pour it into place. Why does Cairo mean Mars in Arabic?
Really? It does?
It means Mars in Arabic, yeah.
I did not know that.
Oh, man. So there's a lot there, man. It's crazy.
So Cairo means Mars in Arabic.
Yep.
And they just gloss over that like that's just a coincidence.
I know, right?
That's so bizarre.
You talked about
Aswan and I think that's about 500 miles from Egypt. Weren't a lot of the stones quarried out there or something like that?
Yeah, I think that was the main quarry place. Yeah, and that's a whole other mystery. How did they get all these megalithic stones 500 miles from the quarry? In a land where there's no trees, really, you know? It's a desert.
Right.
And then they found that there was no slaves there because that was their whole big story. Like, oh, you know, a billion slaves or whatever built this, you know, whatever crap it was they try to tell you. And then they find that there was, like, no slaves, like, nothing at all, like, no. So it's just, you know, they were built for, you know, the king or whatever. It's nonsense. I mean, yeah, I'm sure copycats, some of them, you know, might have
mm-hmm.
tried to, you know, you could see that because they're not barely standing, you know. There's also an unfinished pyramid, which is incredible, that's, I guess, where would it be? About 20 miles from the Giza complex.
Really?
Yeah, and you could walk right into, like, the bottom part of it. It's like there's no top, but they have the whole bottom part. It's incredible. And there's a whole bunch of megalithic. There's, like, a quartz compass laid out over there. It's called Abu Ghraib.
Oh, yes.
Right, and they try to make it. They announced they named the prison in Guantanamo, like, so you wouldn't accidentally stumble upon that. You'd go to the, if you're Googling it, you'd end up in Gitmo instead of, you know, this ancient crystalline, you know, structure that makes no sense.
Why don't you, we've only got 5 minutes left, why don't you tell the listeners who you are again, where your website is, and about, you know, the books you have out. And I definitely want to have you back. I've really enjoyed the discussion, and we can still talk about the assassination of Lincoln someday, but I
did. Yeah, we'll get to it.
Go ahead.
All right, so Xavien Hayes, you could kind of find me on Facebook. That's XAVIANT and then HAZE. If you Google me, a ton of stuff will come up. The best place to find my books would be on Amazon. You could also get them on, you know, Barnes & Noble or your local library. Ask for them. You know, I've written a lot of things. I mean, I wrote a book about Elvis conspiracies, you know?
Really?
Yeah, and I love Elvis. I didn't know too much about him before I wrote the book, but, you know, incredible stuff there. So you could learn about Elvis. I've written about my favorite rock group of all time, Thin Lizzy.
Really?
You know, so, you know, the little biography there, it's mostly a PSA warning for, you know, alcohol and heroin. But it's a great story. It's, you know, sex, drugs, rock and roll. And Philip Lanau was the man, and incredible writer, you know, incredible rock star. Not as popular over here. You know, everyone kind of knows the boys are back in town in Jailbreak.
Yeah.
But, you know, they did so much more than that. There's a lot to learn.
Well, Xavier, I know I ruined your name again, but we'll get it right eventually.
That was good, actually.
That wasn't too bad. Okay.
That was good. Got it.
Well, stay in touch, and definitely I want to dive further into this whole other history that I think we need to learn. And I really appreciate you coming on the show, and stay in touch, and we'll get you back on real soon, actually. I'd like to chat again. So, folks, you've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics, and we had a real special treat tonight, and I'm glad you all stopped by to listen. Have a great weekend. I'll be on tomorrow with Daniel Cooper, who missed his spot on Wednesday. We'll see you later. Bye-bye.